Everyday People is a podcast showcasing seemingly unextraordinary people's beliefs, experiences, history, and outlook. It is a space to share oneself unapologetically and portray the otherwise insignificant everyday person in a more interesting and dynamic light. This podcast's purpose is to emphasize the extraordinary in the otherwise insignificant, and to portray humanity's overlooked normal public as far more engaging and interesting. The beliefs and opinions of the guests do not necessarily reflect those of the Everyday People staff. Rather, we believe in diving deep within people's understanding and thoughts of the world, whether we agree or not. Provoking questions may be asked, but this is not a debate show. We invite our listeners to let go of any preconceived notions and take the guests' ideas on their own terms. Welcome to the Everyday People Podcast. Today I have with me an individual who believes the earth is flat. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's just get right to it. Why do you think the earth is flat?
Well, right away, I just want to say flat earth isn't a belief. Okay. It's an observation.
Okay.
What is an observation?
Keep going, sorry.
Oh, yeah. So, like, you know, you could look online and see how far can the human eye see, and it'll tell you it's about 3 miles because the curvature of the earth.
Yeah.
But I can go, I live, you know, by Michigan, Menominee, Michigan, looking across the water 20 miles to Egg Harbor. I can see Egg Harbor across the water, and I can see an island in the middle and everything. I just think, you know, observing the world through my eyes, I see it's observably flat.
So what do you think, due to your kind of direct experience, why do you think so many individuals are not convinced of that? Why do you think more individuals are not seeing the same thing that you're seeing and coming to the same conclusion?
Well, I might have to guess it might be because most people like to be told answers, and I don't know, for me, I like to be skeptical.
Okay.
And look into things.
So I'm sure you're well aware that there are many people out there, geographers, physicists, scientists, who have looked at these sorts of things and come to a different conclusion. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I love looking into these things. I really do. In the archaeology and the, you know, all the ancient ruins on the earth, and they're digging up more, you know, there's crazy ancient history that they're uncovering with this Jagger. I don't know. Don't those old ancient civilizations, they built these temples that are still aligned to the stars.
I guess I'm a little confused how that relates to, like, how you reconcile your personal experience and your observations with the observations of, you know, individuals who have dedicated their life to studying these types of things. I'm not saying you're not, you know, qualified to make an observation. You definitely are. But how do you square that? Like, there are people who have looked at the same types of things that you look at and have come to completely different conclusions. Where do you...
Well, I think a lot.
Go ahead.
A lot of people that I've been, like, talked with who have strong, like, evidence that back up the globe. I mean, from talking to them, they always come up with their gravity, you know, their magic gravity, their equations. And for me, you don't need mathematical equations to come up with the actual observable, testable, repeatable natural science that anyone can do to see that there's no curvature.
How does gravity relate to that?
Well, gravity is when you look at the mathematics of how you can see distances and stuff, and I feel like refraction and their imaginary numbers to put in with their equations. But what they can't show, I don't know anybody who's ever, like, I don't know who you're talking about that goes out there and proves that the earth is round. NASA? Because NASA's the only one who's giving you fake CGI pictures of cartoon planets. Like, when you go out there with an actual telescope, you'll see that the lights are these luminaries which I've done. I've looked through telescopes. I've built a telescope, and it's crazy.
So
It's on.
I guess I'm just a little confused where we're going. I mean, NASA isn't really the only authority that, you know, claims the Earth is round. I mean, virtually every scientific authority on the planet. Not only that, but virtually our entire telecommunication system revolves around satellites, which revolve
around. Well, if you look into satellites, well, satellites are all balloons. You'll never find an actual picture of a satellite in space, like, it's CGI, but when you look into the satellites, they're launching and they're open about it as giant balloons, helium balloons, pulling up these devices that have solar panels on them and stuff, and they've crashed, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely been weather balloons that have crashed that have made people, you know, kind of ponder what's going on.
Well, so Google has their cameras in the sky, their balloons, and
yeah, I mean,
you have. You know, Elon Musk and his SpaceX.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the footage. What's that?
Do you think he's behind it too? Or?
Well, I mean, in the essence of, it's a big stage, the world's a big stage, and he's putting on a big show, yeah.
Okay. So, I guess I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I'm getting, what I'm understanding is that there is a big conspiracy about keeping the idea that the Earth is a globe around.
Well, the globe, in my opinion, it promotes the idea of overpopulation, you know, scarcity.
How so?
Because, you know, they've discovered it all. There's nothing else left to discover, you know. We're going to run out of resources. Climate change. The world's, you know, we got to have climate lockdowns. You're the carbon emission that you got to, you know, it's more of a leash on your neck for the government. I don't know. The globe is, and it goes way back to the Jesuit, you know, Copernicus.
But how does, I guess, how does that, if you're critical of those types of things, we can talk about that. But it would seem that even if the Earth was flat or if the Earth was a globe, we would still have scarcity. How does portraying the Earth as a globe necessarily?
Well, how so would you have? In my opinion, you know, Earth, when you have these people who think flat Earth is a disc, you know, floating off in space, that's nowhere near what flat Earth is. If you're familiar with biblical cosmology, I don't know if you're familiar with biblical cosmology.
A little bit. I'm not super well versed. Go on, tell me more.
But, well, I mean, the biblical cosmology has nothing to do with the Bible.
Okay.
It goes, you know, you have Hinduism, you have the Jewish, you have Chinese, Japanese, Viking, Hindu, all these ancient civilizations wrote about, depicted a flat and stationary Earth and their technology. Like, take the astrolabe, for example. The astrolabe is an ancient instrument used that was a calculator, a time sundial. It could tell you where all the planets were, and it worked by positioning the Earth in the center as a stationary. So the only way to triangulate any position in the sky requires a 90-degree baseline. It doesn't work. So astrolabes and sextants also work, showing you the Earth is flat and stationary.
I mean, you can still have a 90-degree angle with a round Earth if you point it straight up at the sky. And you can correct for the error of the average curvature of the Earth within that triangulation calculation.
But that's all automatically assuming that the Earth has a curve.
Well, you can set up like a scientific test. You can see, well, if we don't have to correct for the curvature of the Earth, is the location that we're looking for accurate? And if we do correct for the curvature of the Earth, is it accurate then? And as far as I can tell, like I said, I'm not here to debate you. I'm just wanting to know what you think about this. But as far as I can tell, it's the positional accuracy of GPS, which is directly, it utilizes triangulation calculations. When the curvature of the Earth is corrected for, you get a more accurate location. So how do you kind of square that? Do you think GPS is involved in the big conspiracy, or?
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
And I guess I'm still a little confused how, like, the goal of this conspiracy to tell us that Earth is a globe, like, you said it relates to scarcity and everything, but how does that
It's also a cover up, you know. It's also to one. This is what I say, and I don't know how crude it sounds, but one way for people to make their religion sound better than everyone else's is they slap the label science on it.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It's illegal to teach religion in school, but they love to teach the Big Bang and the theory of evolution. And even though there is no actual proof to back up macroevolution.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, we have seen different species emerge that are unable to mate with the previous species. We've seen it in fruit flies. We've seen it in birds. We've seen species go extinct and then evolve back into existence.
Well, yeah, no, that's certainly, I mean, there's incredible studies with light and laser light with this. I mean, the sun is an incredible form.
Yeah.
I mean, species, I, you know, you got the woolly mammoth. That, I guarantee, is roaming around the far reaches of this realm.
What makes you think that?
Well, you got Admiral Berg, an incredible... You know, you're familiar with Admiral Berg, right?
No.
He's a really renowned military expert. He went on this expedition, High Jump, or Operation High Jump. You know, he took a whole fleet of soldiers and everything to go put a military base on Antarctica. Crazy, crazy stories. He does... in his journal, and he talks about, you know, going to the North Pole, flying over, seeing woolly mammoths, and then contacting alien people claiming he flew into inner Earth. And but this is coming from a really renowned general, General Admiral Berg. They made a movie on his stuff. He went to Antarctica. They got attacked by USOs, like underwater submerged objects that came out of the water. Yeah, crazy, attacked him and all sorts of weird stuff. But Operation High Jump.
Why is this not more well known? Like,
well, it's covered up, you know. I mean, he claimed there were Nazi saucers that ever attacked him. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on. But right after this happened, all the nations in the world came together and formed the Antarctic Treaty, saying no one can come to Antarctica. No, it's Antarctica's off limits. Here's a peace treaty. Everyone agrees. So you have these United Nations now. And you look at the United Nations logo, and it's a flat Earth.
I mean, it's hard to make a 2D image like an actual globe, but I know what you mean.
Well, yeah, they say you can look on the bottom of globes, and they tell you, you know, this is not an accurate unit for measuring traveling and stuff. You don't want to use a globe as an actual map and think you're going places, because when you're in the Southern Hemisphere, it takes you much longer to travel distances. There's been reports of people in Australia and the Outback taking their vehicles out, you know, measuring distances three times longer than what they're proposing on the globe.
Wouldn't a globe be a longer distance if it's a curved line versus a straight line? So if it's longer than they expect, how would that point?
You mean in the Southern Hemisphere, when you have these things like trade winds and these underwater currents that affect ships? And it caused them to take weeks to go distances that should only take days?
Well, I mean, there definitely are ocean currents out there, and there definitely are, you know, winds within the atmosphere that dictate travel. And that would happen regardless of the model of the Earth.
Well, the heliocentric model is relatively not that old, in my opinion, from what I've seen, because you can look at old encyclopedias from back in the day. A lot of them have, I think, they've been burned, you know, they've been hidden up and covered, but they talk exclusively about the firmament. I don't know if I'm saying that word right, the firmament, the dome above, you know. They have the measurements, they have the distance, they have the ice wall from, you know, common encyclopedias. A buddy of mine has an encyclopedia, and it shows, when you have Antarctica, it shows this huge ice wall flat. It's crazy. It's interesting. It's really interesting.
What prompted you to stumble upon this? Was it completely independent, where you just looked out into Lake Michigan and you saw that island? Or were you influenced by other things? Or
I was influenced way back around 2015. I think I could date it back to 2015 or 2017. Definitely in 2017 I was really heavily into flat Earth. But I mean, what intrigued me was I just graduated from college, and I went for prototype and design and engineering, and I had all these ideas in my head for, you know, designing these weird worm gear type mechanisms. And I was just doing research and stuff and finding, like, you know, flying saucers. And I was just inspired, like, oh man, if you could make a flying saucer, just really looking into flying saucers and all this. And I was really big into David Wilcock and Gaia TV.
Okay.
Or,
yeah.
I don't know, it was after this happened, but I was looking at it, and then Tesla came up, and then once I dove heavy into Nikola Tesla, I went on this crazy mountain trip with my girlfriend. We went saw like the Royal Gorge, and I was up in a hotel, and I had just seen all, and it was something I watched that just, it was an aha moment. I was like, what the heck? And ever since then, I was like, yeah, the Earth is not a ball.
Interesting. So you went on this trip, you saw the Earth, and you had a bunch of different things happen that kind of coincided with this particular belief.
Yeah, before this happened, I was really big into NASA and science, and that's like the Juno satellite going to Jupiter and everything, and I was always watching these stars every night. I would watch the star out of my window, and I'm like, what is that? You know, I'd watch it come out in the daytime, and I would download the Starfinder apps. I would try to figure out where this star, what is this star? Mm-hmm. And looking into it more and more, I'm like, it's very interesting. You know, I don't know. I've been out there to SETI Ranch. I don't know if you're familiar. It's called Enlightened Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's in...
I've heard about it, yeah.
Yeah, you're familiar? Yeah, hey. And man, right when I got there, there was a big giant orb in the field, and it was pulsing, and it shot up into the sky. And I mean, everyone that I was the only one there who was maybe me and like a handful of people, very few out of like 200 people. It was me and like a couple others who were flat earthers.
So how is this belief, or as I'll use your word, how is this observation, has this affected like any of your friendships or anything like that? Have people kind of recoiled in horror? Has the like, how has this affected your kind of social life in general?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've gotten, you know, I can learn to bite my tongue. You know, you bring it up and you can see people's reactions. Well, you better not be a flat earther, you know, or in person and stuff. It's definitely affected my relationship. That one girlfriend who I was talking about when I took on a mountain trip, that was definitely affected by me definitely becoming infatuated with this new, you know, jumping down the rabbit hole. What is this? And
they just weren't into it, or?
I'm sorry, what was that?
You said it affected your relationship at the time. This person just wasn't into it, or how did that?
Yeah, she definitely was not, she didn't think the Earth was flat, you know, she was like, it really put her off. You know, a lot of my family members, you know, my grandpa is a colonel in the Air Force, and he is deaf. Like, I'll always go around him, be like, space is fake. And he's like, space isn't fake. The Air Force, I don't know, rockets or something.
Don't you think his experience is a little more... I don't want to downplay your experience or your observation or anything, but don't you think his is maybe a little more credible, given he's been in the Air Force, he's flown planes, he's probably seen distances that you and I will never see. Don't you think his observation also has a lot of weight, even maybe more so than yours?
Well, you know, I think he's open-minded to a lot of things, but I don't think he's really experienced that aspect of the Earth more so for his involvement with the Air Force and stuff.
Flying planes above the Earth, like multiple miles over, like...
He was more involved with bases, and he was in Africa and, you know, in control of missiles.
Okay. I mean, that's still, being in control of missiles, that's still, you really have to calculate the curvature of the Earth.
Radars, I don't know, looking into radars, I don't know how a radar would work with a round, you know, a sphere.
Well, radar is just, you know, waves bouncing off other objects, so it would work no matter the shape.
So when you have this globe-shaped model, that's, it has to be, what is the dimensions? I don't know off the top of my head. I know, like 1,036 miles in circumference. No, 36,000, 20, is it 24,000 miles in circumference? I know it's spinning at 1,036 miles per hour. The diameter is like 8,000 miles.
The circumference of the Earth is almost 25,000 miles.
It's close to 25,000, right?
Yeah.
So for that to be spinning for day and night, it would have to be spinning over like 1,036 miles per hour. Which the speed of sound, the speed of sound is what is like 730
or something like that.
760. So that alone, and then for me, when I'm questioning, I'm like, well, how do you have an orbit without centrifugal force?
The rate of speed is fairly constant. There's no acceleration.
But isn't it an elliptic? Because it's not a perfect circle we're spinning around the sun. They say it's not
perfect,
it's like an oval.
Yeah.
So it would have to be slowing down when it comes to each turn. How could it be continuously going the same speed, coming to a sharper turn?
Well, the force that acted on the Earth, whatever it is, to make it spin, now that is a diminishing force, but since there's not really an opposite force acting on the rotation, the diminishing of the speed, the deceleration of the rotation of the Earth, is happening incredibly slowly because there's not another force acting on it. So it's going to keep going.
So it's basically taking relativity, the theory of relativity into...
No, I mean, that's pretty straightforward Newtonian physics. It's not, that doesn't really have anything to do with relativity.
But have you ever played with a gyroscope?
Yeah.
So when when you spin it and then you wobble it, you can feel the physical drag.
I mean, there's friction with the ground on it, and there's air resistance in the air.
Well, I mean, when you have a spinning object, when it's really a cool experiment I saw was where they take a spinning gyroscope and bring it close to a magnet, and, you know, the spinning object is affected by the magnetic field, which really, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if there's magnetism within the spinning object itself, if you put it within a magnetic field, it's going to influence that. And the sun has a magnetic field, the Earth has a magnetic field, other planets have magnetic fields, and there's very real interactions with that. But none of that really diminishes.
But in the flat Earth model, mm-hmm. planets and stars are sonoluminescence. They're sonoluminescent.
Tell me more about that. What does that mean?
So sonoluminescence is where you can take an air bubble in water and put speakers around it, and you can collapse sound inside of this bubble, and it creates stunning light.
So
similar to what you see in the sky.
So like the sound wave collapses, like the actual...
That's the science behind it. You know when you put sand on a plate and vibrate it, and you get certain geometric shapes, and you get these interesting...
Yeah.
It's kind of like that with the frequency. You shine these different frequencies, you get different colors, and you get different patterns in this bubble of light.
I'm confused how sound turns into light, because they're two different phenomena.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing phenomenon. Sonoluminescence is an incredible thing. Have you ever heard of the Crookes radio meter?
No.
The Crookes radio meter is this old device. I don't know how late it dates back, but it's in a jar, and it has these little fins on it. They're like these little vine membranes. And it's basically like white, one side's white and one side's black, and there's a jar on it. And when it's introduced to the sunlight, this thing starts spinning just by the sunlight hitting it.
By what mechanism?
Well, there's been many philosophies and books written on how this is happening and what's going on.
Is there any data behind any of the hypotheses behind that?
Well, Crookes radio meter, there's YouTube videos where you can build your own. I don't know. Crookes radio meter, man, it's pretty interesting. And it also ties into how everything's kind of like a frequency. With the sonoluminescence, light and sound are of the same.
I mean, they both travel in waves, but they're distinctly different phenomenon. I mean, sound is a vibration of molecules, but light is electromagnetic radiation. So I'm not denying that this... So, no, luminescence is a thing, but I'm just confused as to...
Well, like electricity and magnetism. You know, like electricity and magnetism are very similar.
Yeah, they're really the same thing.
They're basically, it's an electromagnetic wave.
Yeah.
So when you have Earth spinning, you know, and wobbling at the same time, mm-hmm. how, I just don't understand how that goes unobserved.
I mean, the thing is, like, we do have observation of that. I mean, I'm going to appeal to the authority on it. I'm going to appeal to the scientific authority on it because I'm personally not qualified to build a rocket and go into space or build the instruments necessary to observe it. But I think if you want to usurp the entire scientific authority, I'm not saying that that's impossible or fundamentally irrational or wrong, but you need some pretty hard data behind that, wouldn't you say? If you're going to usurp basically all of scientific knowledge, you would need some significant data to back that up. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking for significant data to back up how you can feel or how you can't feel any sense of rotation.
Well, it's like being in a car at 60 miles an hour constantly. You don't feel that you're going that fast because the speed is
okay, but
if there's no acceleration, positive or negative, you don't feel anything.
But weren't we talking earlier about how the elliptical, how could that continuously maintain a speed?
Well, when you talk about an elliptical, I think you're more
a parabola,
the elliptical orbit around the sun.
Yeah, elliptical orbit. When it comes to those tight pitch, how don't we? So what's the science? What's the credit? What's the people you might want to credit when looking for how?
Well, if you want to talk about how planets orbit around the sun, that started with Newton.
Well, that gravity. I mean, gravity is easily debunked, though. There's simple experiments you can do at home to debunk gravity. I mean, my favorite: rub your feet on the floor, get some static, build up a charge, and wave your hand over a styrofoam plate, and it'll gravitate. It'll cling right to you.
Well, that's an opposing force. So that's an electromagnetic force, which is known to be stronger than gravity.
So I know that.
To an extent, anyway. But it's simply an opposite force. So it's fighting the gravitational force. But in that particular experiment, the electromagnetic force is stronger.
So would you use the same argument for when you take a magnet and you drop it down a copper tube?
Yeah, that's exactly the same thing. Is
this kinetic energy causes the build of kinetic energy stops the magnet, or slows the magnet down from the weight of the gravity?
The kinetic energy isn't it's not irrelevant, but it's not really the point of the question. If a magnet refuses to fall to the ground, that's simply just because it has a force that is fighting against gravity.
Well, when you drop a magnet down a copper tube, it falls really slow.
Yeah, because copper is
a conductor.
Right. So it's going to fall slower because the magnet itself is attracted to
interfering
the copper tube. Right.
With the waves. So, okay, how about this one? You have a cup of water.
Okay.
It's about half full.
Okay.
You know, you put a coaster over the top, a light film over the coaster, you know, and then you flip it upside down, and why doesn't the gravity pull the water to the ground?
Surface tension.
Because you've created a vacuum inside of the...
I don't know if you're referring to a vacuum that is created, or if you're referring to surface tension, which is just hydrogen bonding of water, which can sometimes fight gravitational forces.
Well, you know that trick where you take a cup of water and you put a coaster underneath it, you flip it upside down, and because the bubble flips, the air sucks it, and it won't fall. You can even shake it a little bit, and the water won't fall out the bottom, you know?
Yeah, I misunderstood. I thought you were referring to surface tension and water, but yeah, that is a vacuum. So a vacuum is basically just a concentration differential.
So how can you have a vacuum? I mean, how can you have like Earth is a container with pressure of a system, and it's got to have a container, right? Inside the vacuum of space.
Don't know if I would say that, but Where are you going?
Because it's the second law of thermodynamics. You need a container in order to have a pressurized system, like the vacuum created in the water.
I know.
Like
what
the sun is, they say it's a big ball of gas exploding. But when I'm looking at it, like, I don't know how you could have that in a vacuum without a container.
So I understand what you're saying, but for the individuals listening, I kind of want to demystify this a little bit. So Basically what you're saying is that things need to dissipate, in other words, increase in entropy, unless it's in a closed system. Unless it's not in a closed system, correct?
Yeah.
The system needs to be closed, otherwise entropy will take over, is what you're saying.
I think so, yeah.
So the closed system within Earth is gravity, which holds the atmosphere, holds everything to it, that is greater than the force of the vacuum of space. And the same thing can be said with the sun. The sun has immense amounts of gravity. So the gravity holds.
How is that measured? Sorry for interrupting.
No, it's okay. I mean, the mathematics behind gravity have been used for a very long time. I mean, since Newton. So, and they've worked exceptionally well with most of our scientific discoveries. Now, there is a point in Einstein's equations where stuff breaks down. So Einstein was missing something with relativity, and he fully admitted this. But that doesn't mean gravity in and of itself is wrong. We may be missing a piece, but gravity works so well in absolutely everything except the tiniest quantum scale that...
Well, they claim that gravity is what? Like, is it 80% dark matter?
No, they claim... So, I'll fully admit, I think the theory of dark matter and dark energy is a little out there, but I'm not qualified to really shit on physicists. But the current hypothesis is that, you know, the majority of the universe is dark matter because there's not enough gravity to hold everything together. That's the current hypothesis, but there's never been any real direct observational evidence of dark matter. So, but again,
well, so
I don't know how that's really relevant.
Well, I mean, it breaks down to where astrophysics, astronomy, you know, the whole general science depends on this theory of gravity.
I mean, it's a critical component, yeah.
Which, if gravity isn't, what if gravity, our depiction of gravity, what if it's the ether? What if it's this electromagnetic field? I mean, you could harness free energy from the air. Are you familiar with that?
So, yeah. I mean, for a while when the electromagnetic force was first really being studied and discovered, the idea of a wave traveling through a vacuum really seemed just completely wrong. That they thought there must be some ether
yeah,
in the vacuum of space that electromagnetic radiation was traveling through. But further discovery of electromagnetic radiation yielded that this actually wasn't necessary. Now, certain physicists, Tesla included, disagreed with this. But again, I have to back up to how it's relevant to a flat Earth.
Well, it gets down to the sense that everything is this interconnected nature. This, you know, it's much more push towards... This isn't all done by chance. I don't know. You know, it's... It there's no space. Without gravity, there's no space. And you have your independent people, like an independent weather balloons. You can look at the pictures. They all show no curvatures visible, even at 100,000, 120,000 feet in the sky. When you have the Go Fast rocket, the guy with the Go Fast energy drink, he made this rocket ship. It was, you know, self-funded. This thing was huge. It was like the size of the back of a semi. And he launched this thing in Nevada in the desert at like 11 in the morning. They have this all documented, and this rocket shoots up into the sky. They strap GoPro cameras, all sorts of stuff on this rocket. You know, they want to send it to space.
I've seen stuff like that, yeah.
And the footage shows, you know, it obviously it shot way up in the sky, and then it hit something, and then it fell to the ground.
Okay.
You can break down the footage, and you can see in the footage, you can see the sun, and then you can see the moon. And you can see, okay, the moon is way off in the distance. It's really tiny, but that's obviously the moon. And when you go and you look up the moon calendar, you can see where the moon was at that time. The moon was supposed to be directly over Australia.
Okay.
And it was clearly visible across the horizon over Nevada.
Okay.
About 300,000 feet up, they say, maybe more.
Again, I'm just curious how this relates to a flat Earth. Like, things might bring up interesting questions that might need to be looked into, but I'm not seeing a direct correlation to a flat Earth.
I guess it doesn't necessarily bring up the flat Earth, as it does is says that there is no such thing as outer space.
How so?
That there's a dome above our heads, that it's the firmament, the stars are locked in the firmament. That's why there's no parallax. You can never measure parallax in the stars.
Again, I don't know where this is coming from. How does this odd observation of the moon's position relate?
What's the nearest star? I don't have the like information on top of my hand. I just have estimates. The nearest star, forget the name of it.
The sun?
Well, they say our sun is a star, but what's the next neighboring star?
I believe it's Alpha Centauri.
Alpha Centauri, that sounds really like it. Which is like over how many light years away? Should I try and Google it?
I'm not entirely sure. It's like 40 trillion kilometers. I don't know what that translates to light years, but it's a long... Oh, I think it's... I see it here. It's 4.37 light years away. And Alpha Centauri is actually like a triple star system, I believe.
So like...
So 4.37 light years away is Alpha Centauri, that system. So how does this relate to space not being real or the flat Earth or...
Well, I don't know how to describe it, but when you have lumens and the dimming of light, when you get further away from a light... You can measure, it will dim. And I don't find it fathomable that you can have these lights trillions of light years away and you can still see them.
Do you know why?
But to me, I've built a telescope, I've seen the stars with my own eyes, and they illuminate in such a way that is like water, like a luminaries. They're like luminaries.
Well, do you know why light dims over distance?
I don't know.
Have you ever looked at light through a vacuum?
No, I have not.
So the reason light dims is because there's interference in the air with gases, with electromagnetic force, with a bunch of different things, and that will skew the light and it will scatter the light over time. We don't really have that in space. So that's why light is able to travel in a relatively straight line. Gravity still affects it, but that's why we're able to see stars so far away, because through the vacuum of space, there's no interference, or there's minimal interference relative to the amount of space that it's traveling through. Whereas on Earth, we're chock full of matter everywhere. So
when you can take into consideration when traveling, if you were to travel to distant stars, you know, light years, time-space continuum, you know that, like, you travel... At that speed, time goes slower for you.
Yeah, I mean, there are theories that the closer you get to the speed of light, that has an inverse effect on the value of time.
So if you add up all the equations, you know, how fast are we traveling? Mm-hmm. We're spinning 1,036 miles per hour while zooming around the sun at 66,660 miles per hour or something, you know. And while that's happening, the sun...
You just dropped 666 on here? That's bad luck, man.
Oh, no, that's what it is. I don't know if when you Google it, that's what comes up.
All right. So anyway, we're rotating at whatever particular speed, and we're revolving at a particular speed. Go on. Sorry.
You know, that's happening, and you're shooting around the sun nearly 500,000 miles per hour. When adding up all those crazy things, you know, how is it that we can still map the same sky that our ancients did?
Because we're looking at the same sky and we're looking at the same patterns.
But to me, it doesn't make sense. I would think we would see different constellations every 6 months when we're on the other side of the sun.
We do. I mean, a lot of constellations are seasonal.
But yet the Big Dipper, you know, you have Polaris. Polaris always remains fixed in the center.
Well, think about a ball going around a bigger ball. If you look directly up, there's one that's always going to be directly above it. This isn't strictly true, but it's generally true that we're rotating in about two dimensions. There's a little variability there, but we're rotating in, or revolving, I should say, on a relatively flat plane. So certain dimensions of that are going to be relatively constant, especially when you consider the space that we're revolving is just so many orders of magnitude smaller than the distance by which those constellations are far away. So it's like, you know, it's like moving in inch diameter circle and then looking up, you know, 7,000 miles. It's not going to look like it moves very much, because relative to us, it really doesn't. Or we don't move very much relative to it, I should say.
Because us wobbling, you know, we have the summer equinox, the winter solstice.
Yeah, the Earth rotates on an axis.
It's obviously, clearly you can see the sun travels above our heads. You know, in the summertime, it's farther up north, and in the wintertime, it's farther south. You know, just observing that.
I mean, there is more sunlight in the summer months than in the winter months, at least in the north.
But yeah, you can take a picture of the sun every day, and it'll form the analemma, you know, like that figure eight, the analemma.
Yeah, I mean, it'll move in a particular, it will perceive to move in a particular direction, yeah.
Yeah, and so will the moon. The moon does an even crazier one.
Yeah.
So while this is happening, the stars, like Polaris, is still remaining fixed.
That's because the distance between us and the sun is so much smaller than the distance between us and Polaris.
Okay, and then if we're moving, you know, when you're in a car and you're driving past buildings and you have a building in front of you and a building behind you, well, the building in front of you is moving past you faster. You can see the building behind moving slower, you know, it's parallax. You can see the house in front of you moving faster than what's behind you. So when we're observing the stars, how come we never see stars do that? We never see some stars moving slightly faster than other stars.
Well, we do see certain stars, like certain constellations and certain stars, hang out longer in the sky than others. We definitely see.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where you tie into biblical cosmology and astrology. I mean, personally, I believe
directly to what you were just talking about, though. Like, if we're closer to one star and we're moving past it, it's going to seem like we move past it faster. Whereas if something is farther away, it's going to seem like we're moving past it slower, which would seem to explain the problem that you have.
But yeah, when you look at the night sky, all the stars, they all move at the same. They're all like locked.
Well, they look locked because the distance is so great and the differential speeds are relatively small in comparison. So it's going to look locked, but you know this and I know this. The pattern of the stars in the sky changes throughout the seasons because we are moving.
Well, yeah, that's the zodiac. I mean, you could do it the other direction. You could say we aren't moving, and the zodiac is moving above our heads and is undefeatable. Well, astrology, I mean, it pains me to see when you look online and you look up astrology, the first thing comes out is the absolute pseudoscience.
It kind of is, though. I mean, it's never been able to predict anything empirically. I mean, there's so many studies trying to figure out, what, you know.
You can't. That's like saying you when you use palmistry to see the future. Palmistry, I mean, you can't
that's like
use palmistry to see the
future. That's palm reading, future. Right?
I know, but it's not.
Is that what that is, though?
About the future. Yeah, well, looking into it, palm reading isn't, you can't, because people without hands still have a future.
Sure. But do you believe that a palm has some data that certain people can observe?
Oh, yes.
Predict the future about people?
The palms have more sensory receptors in them than your eyes do. You really do see the world with your hands. You feel in touch. And
I don't know if that's true, because there's billions of rods and cones in on your retina.
Oh, yeah, in your eyes, yes. I'm familiar. But your hands, it's incredible.
I don't know the exact number of how many sensory receptors are on your hands, but that doesn't necessarily...
You could try and fact check it, but...
No, I mean...
From what I'm familiar with is hands, there's more connections. And then this is really gets interesting with acupuncture. They have, you know, with your hands injected, like, salts into the hands, and they go directly to these parts in the body that are connected to your hands. You know, you could look at ancient books that actually have this all even written out. And not only that, like your fingertips, like to your nose, there's part to your stomach, to your lungs, you know, there's pressure points in your hands that connect all over your body.
Yeah.
And not only that, but your hands are related to the stars, like the planets, where these lines go in different areas in your hand. So that also ties into astrology.
Could you give me an example of what in your hand relates to the direction?
So what you have under your middle finger is like, I think it's your Mount of Saturn. And these people with palmistry are able to see and identify kind of your character and stuff. And you can actually, people are able to guess when you were born by your palms. Because it shows a lot of information with your birth chart.
Right, but this has been tested so many times, and neither palm reading nor astrology has ever been able to really predict anything under repeatable conditions.
It's not necessarily predicting as it is.
What I'm saying is that we've already tested astrology and palm reading and acupuncture even, and none of these things really give any predictable indication of anything. So acupuncture is really difficult to control for placebo, so the study of it is kind of in limbo. Nonetheless, it is very popular, and I'm not saying it can't give a predictable physiological response. It can. But first of all, it's never been proven to be good for any chronic condition, but at least not greater than placebo. But again, it's really hard to test acupuncture for placebo. But as far as like palm reading and astrology, like I said, it's never been a reliable indicator of anything. And we've tried this, you know, the data is very clear on it. So how do you cling on to this knowing that?
Well, there's a lot of data that goes, you know, the other way. It goes in, and it's ancient data. And I think a lot of it's also suppressed. You mean you have the
it and why?
Alchemy. Well, pharmaceutical alchemy, you have this, you know, drugs and stuff to cure things that you could have these natural remedies for that have been discovered, but it's been hidden. Like a lot of the...
Why is it so secret then? Like if you personally can stumble upon this ancient wisdom, why can't so many other people? Like, I know there are other people out there that believe this stuff is effective, but why does it always fail to gain a foothold? You'd think they could just go door to door curing people's cancer. You know,
well,
it wouldn't be
epigenetics. You know, it's not like the cure comes from within the mind.
That's not what epigenetics is.
Well, epigenetics, you know, what is epigenetics in your opinion?
It's not an opinion. It's a real biological phenomenon that
real
very precise understanding. It's to some extent anyway, but the exact mechanisms at times are not fully understood. But like the methylation of certain genes, so polymerase cannot attach to the DNA. That's a mechanism of epigenetics. It's just an environmental control over gene expression. But
well,
how that relates to what you're talking about?
I've heard it more so like thoughts. has a direct effect on your body.
That's not what epigenetics is. Okay. And I know that I don't mean to sound arrogant. I'm just saying that's factually not what it is. But
there's this awesome doctor. I forget his name.
If you want to talk about like the mental aspect of health, there's very real, mental aspect of health. Of course, I don't think anybody denies that.
Well, wouldn't you agree that your behaviors are directly affected by your thoughts?
That's like saying your thoughts are directly affected by your thoughts. So yes.
Yeah, so epigenetics is a study of how your behaviors and environment can cause changes that affect the way your genetics work.
That's not the way most biologists would define it.
Well, because most biologists are bred out the book and have went to, they got their PhD because the academic hubrism of the world nowadays is like, I'm not even going to listen to you if you haven't went and got your PhD and you basically memorized everything they wanted you to memorize out of a book and base all of your findings on these.
Well, getting a PhD is not simply just a memorization. Like, you have to contribute to the field in a meaningful way.
But how do you know that this field isn't already compromised?
Well, I mean, there's definitely special interest in academia and in science. I don't think anybody denies that. But when you have different people from all across the world, from all different walks of life with different interests coming to the same conclusion, it gives us a workable model of reality. That's what science is.
So, well, this is amazing. Yeah, well, you got the scientific method. And what I've witnessed in these last few years of being into this really, really heavily, idea of flat earth, I've watched so many people coming up to this, and they're just watching it explode, and it's getting bigger and bigger every day. I love it. It's awesome. I mean, don't mean it's not weird or anything, but it's pretty cool to see the community grow. And have you ever heard of the Tartarian Empire?
No.
Oh man, the Tartarian Empire, and you have the mud flood. There's this ancient civilization.
Ancient Game of Thrones shit.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. You have these old maps. They have, the Kingdom of Tartaria, and you have, I can't even begin to describe it. It's this crazy conspiracy, they're calling it, but I don't think it's a conspiracy. You have all these buildings, this amazing architecture that's built as if they're tools to harness electricity out of the air. They're like a cathedral. They're built like cathodes, the way to trap electrons through the air and make them as a conductor. They're everywhere, especially being in the Midwest area.
There's not just cool electrons floating around. They're part of molecules. And if you rip out the electrons from molecules, a lot of things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the basis of a lot of
chemistry. My new fascination has been the mud flood, just Googling the mud flood.
What's that?
It's all these buildings all around the world. You got the pyramids. Those are the common, the pyramids of Egypt, the Gaia pyramids.
Yeah.
But then you have all these in Indonesia, you have in Hindu, or these parts of the world in India and stuff. And these are amazing, amazing, amazing structures.
Right.
That are temples, kind of. And you can look at them compared to Tesla coils or Tesla's Jacob's ladder and these devices. It's like, wow.
How are those related? Like the pyramids and the Tesla coil and Jacob's ladder?
Well, because I like to look at ancient civilization, and it looks like they were much more technologically advanced than we are today.
In what way?
Looking at their architecture, looking at their buildings. I mean, looking at these old pictures where you have people on horse and buggy standing next to these giant, grandiose buildings that are monolithic. And
sure, but we have, the Burj Khalifa. And
but you don't have any pictures of these buildings being built. You have built pictures of them burning down and being destroyed.
I mean,
you have the mystery of the world fairs.
I mean, we have pictures of the Burj Khalifa being built.
Well, the Eiffel Tower. What's that one in New York? The woman thing. The Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
That was originally in Paris, and they took it down and relocated it into New York.
Yeah, it was
Paris was known as the City of Light.
Sure.
And looking at automobiles, even if you look at automobiles in 1880, gas, I mean, they were steam powered, electric, even. They're electric automobiles before the 1900s.
Where?
You could find these pictures. They're all over. Just looking at 1880, you know, early automobiles. The first, like, the first steam powered mobile was like in 1800s, like 1806, maybe.
Well, steam powered and electric powered, is those are very different things.
I wonder what time, when it was in New York, they had a fleet of electric cars in like early 1900s. It was like 1908. They had all electric taxis in New York. And in Chicago, you had the Chicago Fire. It took out a lot of these amazing buildings, which is also breaking down the mystery of the World Fairs. And all over the world, they had these huge fairs that supposedly they say they built these fairs for the event of showcasing the extraordinary technology that they've, you know, all had. Everyone came together. But these buildings, they stretched for miles, and they were huge buildings built, you know, like, incredibly. And after the fairs were done, they tore them all down. They blew them all up with TNT and everything.
Why haven't we all heard about this?
Because it's a big cover-up. That's why they teach you when you're a baby, they have to put a globe in your face. Every movie, Universal Studio, they have a big globe come across. They want your head in a globe. They don't want you to be familiar with...
But how is this all related? Like, how is the blowing up of inventions and the globe, how are these related? And I have to go back to, like, what is the realistic goal behind, you know, trying to convince the whole world that the Earth is a globe? Like, what? I don't understand.
I don't know. Maybe a nefarious agenda. Maybe, what? You know, the World Economic Forum openly wants to merge humans with artificial intelligence. This is this big push.
I mean, is that necessarily a bad thing? And how does that relate to the globe Earth?
Well, because when you look at the globe Earth, it puts you in... Well, because there's different ideas. When you have the globe Earth, you have this... You're a speck on a speck on a speck. You're just this insignificant, you know...
Sure.
Drop in the ocean.
Sure.
But when you have flat Earth, you don't have outer space.
Okay.
You have this encompassing realm of material existence where you are just like a co-creator in this infinite intelligence, and you are actually capable of incredible things. Being a human, you're not a drop in the ocean. You are like the entire ocean in a single drop. They don't want you to think that. They want you to think that you came from a monkey, and that you're that monkey came from a fish, and all this is random.
Well, that's not strictly true. I mean, natural selection isn't random. I mean, chance plays a role, but it's not. Natural selection follows very specific.
I don't know. I look at the human body, and it looks pretty like a pretty advanced machine to me.
Sure, but there are engineering flaws in the human body. I mean,
yeah, we eat with the same hole that we breathe from.
Yeah. So how? We would expect things like that if we were to see, like, natural selection, right? We would expect that there were things that didn't make a ton of sense, you know, that we would expect things that were left over from previous generations, and that's what we do see. But if we were designed perfectly, we wouldn't see these weird things. We wouldn't...
Well, I think maybe we were designed differently than we are what we're doing right now. With our American diet and, you know, the way we're living our life, I think we are bodies of light.
I mean...
Like, your DNA is made of light codes, isn't it?
No. DNA is just a nucleic acid. It's bound together through a hydrogen bonding of nucleotides with, like, a sugar backbone.
Are you familiar with the phantom DNA effect?
No.
Where this Russian scientist took... a DNA and put it in a vacuum chamber and looked at it through his telescope, shined light on it, you know, measured the photons and where they went. Mm-hmm. And then he took out the DNA and everything. And, you know, before he was done with the day, before he shut off his telescope, he looked in it one more time and he's seen in the vacuum, the light was still entrained to the DNA that he had in there. But even though he took it out, he could still see the light was there. So now I've heard apparently there is.
He could see like a outline of where the DNA was.
Well, when you like measure light, you measure the distance between the waves.
Sure.
And where the waves go and stuff. So yeah. The phantom DNA effect is basically the light, frequency of the light, electromagnetic wave, entrains to your DNA and activates certain points on the amino acids. And then they break it down to somebody like...
There are no amino acids in DNA.
The enzymes are...
There's no...
Those antenna, those little antenna on your DNA strand. This is what they say that if you take a strand of DNA and unstretch it and measure it at what is a thousandth of an inch, it's like over 30 feet. Those little nucleotides, whatever you call them, the antenna, when you have a frequency, a wave, light traveling through them, an entity who's living in the state of fear, the light, I guess, activates less amino acids. You're activating less available antenna on your DNA. Now, someone living in the state of love, you know, gratitude and upbeat is activating much more points on that DNA.
So I guess you're using a lot of terms that you might be using kind of in a colloquial sense. So I'm not sure what you mean by antenna. There are no amino acids in DNA. So are you talking about the nucleotides? If you shine light on the nucleotides, which are the base pairs, you know, the A's and T's and C's and G's.
I mean, you're not shining light on them. It's basically, it's the frequency of you. You are a light being. They're saying you are a light being.
How
your DNA is light codes, and it's affecting
follows. You know, I don't see that.
So I guess there is an experiment. They put people in a really dark room. It's so dark that when the person can sit in the chair and then get up and leave, there's a trace where their body has been there.
Yeah, so we give off.
And this is the crazy part. That phantom ghost appearance where that, you know, your DNA was, it stays there for like 30 days. Well, when that scientist, the Russian scientist who discovered the phantom DNA effect, it stayed in his telescope for over 30 days before it faded away.
So I guess when we do scientific experiments, we try and repeat them. So we can isolate causal variables and control them and narrow down what is actually causing this. So has this experiment been repeated? And if so, where can I read more about that? Or can you tell me about other times it's been repeated?
I'm sure there's been many.
Because a one-off experiment doesn't really tell you much. You know,
it's called the phantom DNA effect.
Well... interesting. I will look more into that.
There's a lot about it. I mean, there's a lot of papers, a lot of stuff written about it. What about, you know, when you quasi-crystals, plutonic solids?
Yeah, I'm not familiar. But
so Plato, you know Plato, right?
Yeah.
Famous astronomer, or, you know, looked at the sky. He came up with the plutonic solids. By looking at the stars. And I mean, that's the same thing I saw when I looked at the stars, is these imploding shapes, these weird... The plutonic solids is really interesting. It's like an icosahedron, you got the tetrahedron, and these imploding shapes that all make the dodecahedron, you know, with these geometric shapes, you can make all these shapes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with what it is.
With one triangle, the way that you orient it, you can create these 3D dimensions. So that's the... And then you have quasi-crystals.
How does this tie into everything? I'm just confused. It sounds like this is coming out of nowhere.
I'm just basically trying to get some groundwork that particles don't exist.
How did you get to that?
Because everything's a wave. Everything's a wave.
Well, I mean, there are legitimate scientific minds who think that all matter exists both as a wave and as a particle. And this really...
Well, yeah, you got the double slit experiment.
Yeah, this really traces back to whether or not light is a wave or a particle, which
But when you introduce the sonoluminescence, that sound and light are of the same, because you can create light with sound. Really changes the game.
How does that change the game? I mean,
because there's a sound of everything's a vibration, and the vibrations affect, you know, well, like Dr. Emoto with water.
You can say that everything exists in a waveform if measured as such. But
so even emotion, that's why when you introduce the phantom DNA effect, someone living in fear limits their DNA. When you have a doctor, you know, tell somebody, oh, you only have 5 years to live, versus when they're telling themselves mentally, thank you, every day I'm so grateful to be alive. I am a healthy, functioning, amazing person. The epigenetics field actually shows people recover.
But again, that's not epigenetics. I believe that's not what it is. I don't want to get caught up in labels. I know what you mean, but we're talking about flat Earth, and now we're off into some different area that I'm not really sure is related. But if it is, could you elucidate that? Or,
well, yeah, I mean, space isn't real. There's planets aren't big balls. They're these luminaries in the sky, these high frequency. Maybe portals, other dimensional worlds. I mean, I've read The Law of One Material, like Ra. Mm-hmm. It's a great book. And they talk about, you know, the Galactic Council of Venus and these other dimensional entities that have walked the Earth for millions of years. I mean, it just goes this far out. It's really interesting how deep you can go with the esoteric aspect of things. But I think, personally, to bring it into flat Earth, is that it resonates more with the biblical cosmology than it does with any of NASA's outer space or, you know, this new heliocentric Copernicus model.
All right. Well, I suppose that kind of summarizes your beliefs in this and everything. I want to thank you for sharing your beliefs.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sorry if I was...
No, there's no need to apologize. It's been an interesting conversation, to say the least. Do you have anything further you want to add? Any last thoughts?
No, I don't know. This is my first time doing anything like this. I think it was pretty cool. Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't come very prepared or anything.
It's all right. Well, again,
I think that was really cool. You definitely taught me a lot, though.
Yeah, hey. Cool. I learned a lot from you as well. All right. Well, again, thank you for coming on, and thank everybody for tuning in. We will see you all with the next one.